I'm Richard Porter.
And I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and sometimes raving.
Hey, I forgot to tell you this. I went down a bit of a wormhole with old computer games.
Yeah.
Like 8-bit ones I grew up with in the 80s and maybe the early 90s. And someone because I did a video for Car Pervert involving one of them, and weirdly, someone on Twitter went, "Oh, you must remember the last V8 Commodore 64 game." I went, "What?" It was it was called The Last V8. It was clearly a rip-off of Mad Max.
Oh, when you said last V8 Commodore, I thought immediately Holden, which I suppose is...
Oh, yeah. No, but I'm going to... It's weird because The Last V8 was actually the name of the game on a Commodore 64.
Hang on, did you have a Commodore 64 then?
You're damn right I had one. Although I was quite late to the 64 game. A couple of my mates had them. And I really longed for one, and I didn't get one until... I think I didn't get one until they were being phased out. But I didn't care, because I still to this day think it's... in fact, I read somewhere, I think it's the most successful home computer of all time.
What?
Yeah. Again, I went down another wormhole, and someone in about... had written a piece on... It might have been Jalopnik, where they went into a garage to have, like, an emissions check and a brake check on their car.
Yeah.
And the garage, back in 2016, 2017, was still using a Commodore 64 to check the balance of drive shafts.
No.
Or something like that. And there's a picture. Yeah, I will forward it to you, the link. There's a picture of this Commodore 64 absolutely thick with oil and dirt sitting on a bench. And it apparently it still is used to balance either drive shafts or prop shaft. I can't remember what. But yeah, it still uses a software that's absolutely fine for checking the tolerances of something like that. And it made me think, I love the Commodore 64.
When Calvin Harris got really big,
yeah,
first time around, I guess acceptable in the 80s and all that sort of was stuff, his album.
Yes.
I think he was still making music off an old Amiga that was miles out of date, but it was just, it's what he had and it's the software he had, and it was all very sort of homespun in your bedroom kind of music making, and,
yeah,
and he achieved huge success with it, and I think he carried on.
Well, I think acceptable in the 80s definitely had that kind of 8-bit or 16-bit music vibe.
Yeah.
Which I do really like. I think, I mean, he's incredible in his own right. I'm a bit upset that he lives in LA. I still think he should live in Scotland, but it's not up to me. It's not up to me.
But he's one of those people who, he's what would be known in the industry as doing an Elon Musk, that once he got rich, he also suddenly got really pumped and more handsome magically.
Did Elon do that? I don't...
Oh, yeah. Have you not seen pictures of Elon Musk when he was doing PayPal? He's got thinning hair and he's a total dweeb.
No, I haven't checked... images of the Musk.
Well, after this, do Musk up. The other one, I think I've talked to you about this before, but the other person who uses an out-of-date, or used way after they were obsolete, used an old 80s computer, was Ken Morse, the Rostrum cameraman that does all Rostrum camera work for TV documentaries, or did. I don't know if he's still alive. And I went to his studio once, and he had a sort of rig that did all the rostrum work. So, you know, you imagine you've got your photo for a documentary, and it's of like four soldiers from the Great War, and you want to sort of gently drift across them and then zoom in on the last man in the line. And he had this sort of automated rig that would do all that, and it was run by a BBC Model B.
What?
And this was in the turn of the century. This is about 2000.
And he was still using a BBC Micro.
Yeah. Because someone had built it for him in the 80s. Talk about acceptable in the
80s. It's
someone
acceptable had built it in the 80s.
In about 1984, they'd made this for him, and he went, well, it still works fine, so why would I change it? I had it made for me. You can't buy this software off the shelf. It's very specific to the rostrum camera world, and not many people do rostrum cameras. So Ken Morse was still plugging away at this with that lovely tappety keyboard.
They had very, very... very deep keys. You know, it's
deep.
A bit like a car throttle, which has a lot of travel. You know, some cars have a very short throttle and some have a very deep throttle.
Like a TVR. Do you remember TVRs?
TVRs
were incredibly long. That was their traction control, wasn't it? It was just, let's try and meter out the power a bit.
So, like, yeah, you had to be better. You could drive your TVR for maybe a year and find more throttle. I found a bit more throttle. I didn't realise it was down there.
it's like digging
for gold.
Digging for throttle trouble. I think Chris Monkey Harris, who we know, told me this story that he had a mate who was a TVR dealer in their heyday of the 90s, you know, Griffith Chimera era.
Cerbera's still my favourite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they were nice looking.
They're still one of the best looking British cars of all time, I think. And
yeah,
it hasn't dated, I don't think, now. I just absolutely love it.
No, they're still
handsome. I've never owned one. I've never owned a TVR.
Griffith as well. I mean, the Griffith is, I think, a really pretty car.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this mate.
The Richard Griffith. It's a special edition of an extremely fat British actor.
Yeah, it weighs about twice as much as the normal one and runs on sticky buns.
Instead of glass fibre, they just made a lead-bodied edition.
So Monkey Harris told me this story about his mate who's a TVR dealer, and without fail, he'd get these city boys coming in and they'd be looking to trade probably from like an M3 or something, or maybe even not even something that high performance. They just got their first decent bonus, you know, they'd be like sort of switching out of a Golf GTI or something into a TVR.
Oh, dangerous.
And this guy would take them on a test drive in London. I think his test drive route was sort of they'd go onto the A4 and he would encourage them to floor it. And multiple times what would happen is these inexperienced city boys would floor it, immediately shit their pants at what happened with the acceleration of the noise. And apparently the common response was they would lift off and put it into neutral.
What?
Like almost like a defence mechanism. Like, oh, make it go
just
away.
Smack it into neutral?
Yeah, apparently I distinctly remember being told this. They would panic so much they would knock it into neutral, and then the guy would have to say, now, if you just want to maybe slot it into third and let's clutch out again so we've actually got drive. We're just coasting down a major road.
Just coasting along and like getting down to like embarrassing speeds of about 18, 19 miles an hour with nobody saying anything.
just frozen with white knuckle grip on the wheel.
You just hear the idling. It's just idling.
Yeah. I remember this the other day for no reason at all, that when I borrowed a 350, do you remember the 350, T350?
I do.
I borrowed one, and my girlfriend at the time, that was the car where she, after a while, she went, could you turn the car down now, please?
Turn the car down?
Yeah. And I went, I can't turn it down. That's the noise it makes. And she just went, I've just had enough of it.
Oh, that's so noisy. That's a sort of TVR Spinal Tap moment. Just turn this car down, for fuck's sake. Turn it down.
Anyway, I was going to say about BBC Model Bs, because we had a BBC Model B, because my parents did that thing where they went, well, now, on the one hand, obviously, the kids want a computer, but we can't get one that's flippant and frivolous like a Spectrum or a Commodore.
Yeah.
Let's get one made by the BBC because that'll be educational. And so, and I don't, from memory, I don't think the BBC Model B had quite the sort of firepower of a 48K Spectrum or a Commodore.
Oh, it had the graphics package on a BBC was embarrassing compared to a 64. Come on, man, different.
But you know what's weird is that I don't think I knew anyone who had a Commodore.
What?
I know you're like a few years younger than me, but I swear maybe it was a regional thing. Oh, around our neck of the woods, it was very much Spectrum versus BBC. I'm sure of it.
Oh, is this like regional wars of Ford versus Vauxhall? Because down my way in the southwest, when I grew up, definitely the Vauxhall was the powerhouse over Ford. We laughed at fast Fords because we knew that they would go pop.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. When we were like, you know, 15, 16, 17, if you had a GTE Astra, you would laugh at RS Ford owners because you knew, A, terribly made, B, the driver almost certainly had a flat top, and when flat tops were not permitted anymore, and... or a mullet. Yeah, I remember it being a thing, which is why now I look at fast forwards of that era, of sort of 80s, and just go, just no, I'm sorry, I'm just not into it. It would be Astra Digital Dash GTE would trounce it. Maybe not around corners, but definitely on the straights, off the lights.
See, the thing is, often, I suppose, loyalty to a particular make of car can be influenced by if they're from your area.
Yeah.
Which is why, completely. You know, Luton is full of Vauxhalls and Essex and East London is full of forwards.
Forwards, yeah.
And Swindon's full of Hondas and what have you in Birmingham. It was always a Leyland, Austin Rover stronghold. But it was a bit weird.
I knew you were going to use the term stronghold. I knew it.
Well, yeah, anyway, the weird thing for me growing up in the Northwest was there was a bit of a split loyalty. I mean, obviously Bentley was the home team, but not everyone's got a Bentley. But the there was a factory in Halewood. But then there was a Vauxhall factory at Ellesmere Port, very close by.
Of course, there was. So, didn't they make the Omegas?
No. Omegas always came from Germany. No, they Ellesmere Port made Astras when I was a kid. Anyway, there were Astras and I guess before that it made Vivas, I think, and Chevettes maybe. I forget now.
Viva, Ellesmere Port.
Do you know what was weird? I discovered the other day, Halewood was Escorts in the 80s. But before that, and I think when it was set up in the 60s, it made Anglias. But for a period, Halewood was one of the surprisingly large number of factories that made Capris.
Oh.
And you sort of think the Capris are kind of niche car compared to a Cortina or an Escort. But the Capri was a right tart. They made them all over the shop. They made them in Germany. They made them in Halewood. I think they might have made them in Dagenham. I forget now. I was looking this up and I was like, what?
They sold a lot of Capris, though.
Yeah, I suppose so. But what a strangely peripatetic production history it had.
I don't know what my local car factory was growing up in the southwest. We didn't have many car factories, did we?
Well, you would have Honda now, wouldn't you? I guess you'd have
Honda,
Swindon.
You would, I think. And there's nothing in Bristol, was there? I mean, Bristol was Filton. They made aeroplane engines. It's not quite the same.
Well, and Bristol's.
True. Again, not a mass-produced...
Not a mainstream.
..household vehicle.
Yes, when I was growing up, we all had Bristols to show loyalty to the home team. I mean, if you had a Hispano Suiza or an Alvis, you'd be very much sneered at.
I know. I'd love to have grown up just dicking around in Bristol's would have been brilliant. In fact, actually, there is a Bristol anecdote which I'd written down to chat about today, which was when we used to just regularly buy very cheap cars, and back when the yellow paper existed, as we've talked about. And my good mate Dan, we went down to Bristol for a bit of a lads like long weekend. And we always used to just buy a cheap car. We'd collect together a kitty and we'd go, right, we're going to buy a cheap car and we're going to go away for a long weekend. That's what we used to do. We used to do it quite a lot. This is in the bachelor days, Rich.
Well, yeah.
Bachelor days. Halcyon times. And I remember opening the paper and seeing a Passat GL5, short MOT, £60 runner. And we're like, right, going to buy it. And then my mate Dan, who has now become his byword has become £50 or fuck off. That was his line. And we were like, I said, I'm going to phone up about it, see if it's for sale. We'll go in there. I reckon we can get it cheaper. And Dan was just like, I'm going to pick up the phone and just say, it's £50 or fuck off, mate. It's like, well, you can't use the term fuck off and mate together for a start. It's definitely confusing. It's offensive, for one thing. You're never going to buy a car off someone that you've just told to F off. That's not right.
Good afternoon. Yes, my name is Daniel. I'm just telephoning about the car I saw advertised, and I wondered, would you accept an offer? And the proposal that I have in mind is £50 or fuck off.
It is. And he just kept saying it. Just say it. Just, Johnny, just, it's £50 or fuck off. Anyway, what was great about this was it was still for sale. And we arrived there, and the car on the drive, we looked at it, had a tow bar, which I thought, okay, well, we can sell the tow bar and probably get our money back. But what was even better is the bloke self-haggled. And I don't know if any listeners are familiar with the self-haggle. It's just brilliant. The guy had actually forgotten what he'd advertised it for. So we got there. It was a 60 quid car. I was thought, I'm going to try and get it for 50 without using the term that my mate Dan. And I was kept saying to him, do not say it. Do not say fuck off. Do not say 50 quid or fuck off because it's offensive. And we stood on the guy's drive. And he went, all right, lads. He said, here's the keys. I'll go and get the documents. It runs. It's got a short MOT.
Sorry, just to stop you there. Here are the keys. I'll just go and get the documents. Is it a schoolboy error from the off?
Well, he just wanted
car, it. That's
goodbye
car, isn't it?
I mean, he just wanted it, the poor thing, gone. And actually, I looked round and it was like, this is actually quite good. It was the 5-cylinder manual Passat 80s one with the hatchback. Not as good as the estate, but hey, it was 50 quid or fuck off. And the guy said, look, before I go and get the bits and bobs, he said, I'm not going to take a penny under 45 quid. And my mate Dan looked at me and I looked at him and we both just started biting our lips. It's like, he's immediately self-haggled. You don't need to use the term that you were going to use, the offensive term. 60 quid's clearly out the window. We're straight in at 45. So I just went, look, here's 45 sheets. Go and get the ownership documents. And we all chuckled. And what we did is we drove that car. We did a bit of a tour of Mid Wales in it for a long weekend. And originally we were going to just abuse it. And as we drove away and put a few miles on it, we'd obviously phoned up and got some insurance. It was like, this is actually quite good. And it was brilliant, to the point of the car was only supposed to last for 3 days and then we would just give it away or scrap it or whatever. It was so good. It was still doing the rounds within my mate circles. 3 years later, it was still being used by one of us. It was that good. And it tried to kill itself several times, but it was an indestructible car. It was amazing.
What year was this?
What, that we bought it or the year of the car?
What year were you able to buy a £45 Passat that lasted 3 years?
Let me think. That would have been, I reckon, about 2001, 2002. So 20 years ago, almost.
Even so.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we're getting old, but that doesn't feel that long ago. I can't imagine you could buy a car for that little now, or even
just,
anything like it.
It was just brilliant. It was brilliant. And Dan drove it every day for a while and just kept marvelling at how well it drove. It was so silky. And he bought a caravan to go away for dirty weekends with his then girlfriend. And because it had a tow bar, it's like, oh yeah, it's got the bar on it. And because it's a five potter, it's got lots of torque. I mean, a 50 quid per sat towing up a caravan that was UV damaged. Like one side of it was hearing aid beige and the other side of it was white, just because it had been sat half in and half out of a storage facility for years.
I'm quite fascinated by those cars that get handed round groups of mates. You know what I mean? Where like you're describing here, it's like, you know, one mate sells it to another mate who ends up selling it to another mate. So it's always in your orbit, but with different people, because it feels a little bit like one of those people who's been out with more than one of your friends. And you sort of go, is this weird? Is this awkward
was,
for the people
was,
who no longer are directly involved?
It was that. It was a bit slaggy. It was the Passat slag. Well, we used to call it the Passander. We used to call it the Passander because it was a very, very nice curry that wasn't really offensive to anyone, coupled with the fact that Dan used to really never clean the inside of it. The inside of it got a terrible time. I remember climbing into it once and there was the remains of a lasagna on a crockery plate with a knife and fork in a footwell. And I craned my head in and went, Dan, what's going on? And he went, oh, yeah, I finished a shift late. And I needed to get somewhere. And I was finishing some lasagna. And I said, but how long ago was that? And he went, it was about 10 days ago, that was.
Oh,
Dan, come on. I said, seriously, Dan. I just had a little bit of lasagna. But it was this great because it had a real knife and fork and a real crockery plate. Yeah, and then it got handed on to my mate Ed, who I've met, Party Boy, who thrashed it around when he lived in Birmingham. And it was great, despite the fact that by the time Ed got that car, the Passat had no front end apart from lights and a number plate.
What?
Yeah, because when it was in Bristol with Dan, I don't know if I've told you this in a previous episode, but he was on a night out on Friday night. He got a call from the police saying, your car's been involved in an accident. Where are you? And he was like, what? No, it's parked outside my house. And he lived on one of these hills in Bristol. Bristol being the sort of San Francisco of the UK. And it turns out the car had just come off its handbrake somehow, mysteriously, while it was parked, and he hadn't left it in gear. To this day, he now leaves cars in gear for this reason. And it had just crept off and gone careering down a hill on its own. The steering lock had kicked in, and it had gone into the back of another car, and then caused, you know, fire alarms to go off and all sorts of stuff. And there was no one to be seen. The car was locked, obviously, and there was no one in it. The police were called. So it tried to kill itself, caused a crash without anybody being in it. Dan had to sort out the insurance, but because he felt an affiliation to the Passat by this point, it hadn't really damaged it that much. He had put the bumper back into the front end of it. So he just said, Johnny, I had to get to work on Sunday. Hadn't done any damage to the engine because the radiator sits to the side of the engine in those, like a Audi Quattro. And he said, I just took the bumper off. He said, I just pulled the grill off. And I cable tied a new number plate on it. So it just had, I remember it just had a pair of headlights, like some rubbish Christine Stephen King, but German. And it just had a pair of headlights and a cable tied swinging number plate. And that was it. And there was no other part of the front on it anymore. But it kept going for another like year and a half after that. So
this story's just reminded me of something, which is it's tangentially related because it involves hills and Volkswagens. My parents' old neighbour, Cyril, enjoyed.
Was he really called Cyril?
He was really called Cyril. Cyril Briggs, bless him.
He was never a young person. He was.
Well, he was a gentleman of a certain age. Well, he was by the time I knew. I mean, he must have been young once, but I don't know. Cyril's one of those names where you can never imagine a baby called Cyril.
Absolutely no chance. There's no chance that a baby was a Cyril.
Because it's not a baby's name. It's a gentleman of a certain age's name. Well, Cyril enjoyed a sporty mainstream car. Him and his wife, Jean. No kids. And Cyril was an architect. So he used to favour a two-door car, and he had a succession of Mantas. And then he moved into Sirocco's.
I did not have him down as a Manta guy.
No, you wouldn't sort of architect.
Cyril in the Manta.
Yeah, but Mantas. But before Mantas got a bit calico-ed and tarty, I'm talking early 80s Mantas. And the saloons as well, not the hatch ones. So he had some Mantas, and then he went into Sirocco's, and he had a very tidy second-generation Sirocco, and his office was in Macclesfield, which is the San Francisco of Cheshire. And he was going down one of Macclesfield's many hills when a bag of shopping that he had on the back seat tipped over. And some oranges rolled out, dropped into the floor.
Oh, no, they didn't.
Under the driver's seat. And one of the oranges went under the brake pedal. And when he went to apply the brakes, he was unable. Also, famously, as we were talking about last week, those Siroccos didn't have very good brakes anyway. And
no.
He was unable to summon up enough braking pressure to retard his journey down this hill. I think he went across some traffic, so it could have been really bad, and into a wall.
So hang on, he was in the Sirocco, not the Manta at this point.
Yeah, this was the Sirocco.
And he couldn't squash the orange.
He couldn't summon up enough. He was only a little guy as well. He was quite small with Cyril Hens.
He had the seat quite far forward.
Well, yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, no, he was. He was a really wee fella.
Because Siroccos were normally driven with the backrest of the seat in the sort of 45-degree rude boy position, I always remember.
Well, not if you're a 60-something architect from Wilmslow, they're not. So he was very upright, very close to the wheel, but couldn't summon up enough pressure to sort of burst
to
the orange
squash
that
the
was
orange.
Impeding the brake pedal. So, yeah, he twat it into a wall. I mean, he was all right. It wasn't super high speed. I think he was able just to, you know, the brakes were probably just, the pads were just touching.
I love that the pads were just touching. You're almost, you're narrating the story, which hasn't been written. Brilliant.
So, yeah, that's how Cyril frigged one of his Siroccos.
Fully wrecked, or...?
My memory is that it was repaired, so it can't have been that bad. Although, I always feel like in the 80s, cars got repaired a lot more because I suppose there were fewer systems to go off and ruin everything, but...
They were just easier. They were easier to repair. That, which is why you used to see stuff driving around with odd coloured wings and things.
Oh, yeah.
I get the impression it was just a little bit more mend and make do, even though...
Well, that period when every single Mark 1 Fiesta suddenly had a Mark 2 tailgate that didn't quite sit right.
Yeah, because they were available.
Yeah, they were available because that was the Mark 2 was still a current car. It would fit in the aperture because the Mark 2 was just a heavily facelifted Mark 1. But the lower tailgate was quite bulbous, where it had been quite recessed on the Mark 1, and they just looked stupid and awful. But that's anyone who'd ever had a minor
was
rear
it like
end.
It was like a person wearing a gum shield.
Yeah, exactly like that.
Do you know what I mean?
Why is that sticking out so much? I've got a gum shield in.
I've got a gum shield in.
Thought there was something wrong with your teeth. Yeah, it's exactly that. Yeah, Fiestas with gum shields was a feature of the sort of late 80s, but it was because of rear-end damage to Mark 1 Fiestas.
I always associate that era, the sort of the turn of the 90s, with... And I, another wormhole I went down the other night. I was explaining to my two kids, my daughter who's 10 and a half, my son who's 8 and a half, what raving was and what the rave era was.
How did you start to explain that?
I think because a couple of weeks back I'd been putting a little bit more Prodigy music on. And my son was like, "Oh, Dad, this is just funfair music. I love it. I love funfair music." So he refers to high energy dance as funfair music, which I think is brilliant because he loves funfairs like I do, and loves a bit of high energy dance. So now my 8-year-old just refers to just dance. High BPM as just funfair. And I went, well, the Prodigy was like a big band, big group back in the early 90s, which I loved. So I've been weaning him onto that on his iPod.
Mm-hmm. Good.
But I started to listen to a couple of... I said, well, raves were like big events. Some of them were legal, some of them were illegal. I was a bit young for them in the early 90s, but... I went to a couple in the mid-90s, and I said the great thing was is people were just really happy and lots of laser lights. People, the DJs were mixing on twin decks. He understands records, vinyl records, all that stuff. But when I found a couple of videos to show what Fantasia was and what Vision was and what all the others, I can't remember some of the names, you realise you looked at the car park. And you had a couple of cool people in, like, bay window camper van VWs and stuff. But really, there was a lot of chod. A lot of raver cars were just... It was just hacked up, lashed up chod. Maestros, Capris. Basically, there was a lot of... I would say a lot of 70s cars because they were about 20 years old, right?
Really?
Yeah, there was a lot
I'm surprised at that. I would have pictured the classic raver car would be an absolutely bog standard small hatchback that is precisely 7 years old.
That seven's way too
because
it's way too modern.
Third hand,
way too modern.
Yeah, but cars didn't last back then, did they? I mean, like my mum had a Chevette when I was small, and it was a 1977 Chevette, and I swear by the time that car was 3, certainly 4 years old. It was going rotten.
Yeah.
And by the time we sold it, which was, I think, in 1983, maybe, so 6-year-old car, and it was absolutely... The front wings had holes in them.
Were they just flapping like a manta ray's wings?
I don't remember it whistling at speed, but I bet it did because it had so many fucking holes in it. It was like an ocarina. And the bloke who bought it actually went, I'm not worried about that because those are coming off straight away. I'm going to put... And he was going to put some massive engine in it and flare the wings and all sorts.
Really? Yeah. It was a modifier.
Yeah. So it didn't matter.
He was going to turn it into a rally rep.
Yeah, like a sort of HSR type thing. I'm sure that's what he was going to do. That would have been like 1980.
He was going to put Andrews Heat for Hire
Yeah.
stickers. and all the 80s rally.
It was actually Russell Brooks that we sold it to. It was a bit weird. He just came by. I would have said, that's the thing, bearing in mind cars didn't last, I'm amazed there'd be sort of 20-year-old cars in a rave car park. I would have said,
yeah, there's loads of it.
Just third hand or possibly inherited / borrowed off parent Nova, Fiesta, maybe Metro, and the signature of all of them as they arrived at a rave is absolutely on the back bump stops, because there's three, possibly four lads in the back.
Oh, there's definitely too many people in it. It was over. And also in the boot had probably a tent just in case, but you never erected it.
Or another mate.
Some water, a person. Yes, yeah. I don't know, glow sticks, one of those really awful horns that you blew into, which I can't remember, the rave horn, I think that's what it was called.
Well, it was a bit of an air horn, wasn't it? You'd have an air horn sometimes. I always associate
that. Yeah, yeah. Oh, clack, yeah. And you'd also have probably a couple of quite big puffer jackets, because it did get a bit cold in the early hours of the morning. And if you were going to take a break from raving, you'd put your Technics / Kenwood / I don't know, XL recordings jacket on, wouldn't you? Which is always black.
Puffer jacket, perfect.
I love a Technics, Kenwood, something like that. And it would always be puffer, but sometimes the sleeves were leatherette. Sometimes the sleeves were leatherette, but the rest of it was kind of silky polyester, whatever. And that was, there were loads in these videos that I looked upon. Loads of 20-year-old just shoddy cars, and it was great because I really had a moment of going, of course a raver was driving around in like a 70s or early mid 80s car with, you know, a bad sound system, it'd be a Goodman's speakers on the parcel shelf, and always getting stuck. And when you read some of the, I had to screen grab some of the comments because I found them so funny. Some of the comments were just brilliant. People going, yeah, not being funny, but like, yeah, Fantasia 92. I still never found out who pushed my Lancia into a ditch.
Lancia?
Yeah. So I was thinking, what would that be? I was thinking, would it be a
Y10? It's a Y10. That's the Ravers
it's
Lancia.
It's a Y10.
It's definitely a Y10.
It's a Y10 Fire.
Yeah.
Or that was always the sort of 80s small Lancia that nobody cares about.
No, I'm telling you now, that is without question that the only Lancia for a raver is a white head. I don't know. An old Beta, no.
No, too cool. Too cool.
A Delta, no. I'm just not buying it. And
I just, and there was so, honestly, there was so many of them. So many references to, like, I stayed on at Fantasia for an extra day because me and my mates couldn't find my car. An extra day? It was just brilliant. Just don't know where the car was.
What did they do? Just stand in the same spot and hope it would come back like a dog?
Honestly, it was. But of course, they're just walking around the fields and the music was probably still going a bit. And you were like, yeah, well, let's just stay on a bit. And it was. I mean, honestly, the comments just keep on giving. Here's one. Took me and the lads 2 hours to find my Metro Turbo. Lol. Happy days. Bring it on. Strange shit went down. Shamrocks burgers. Shamrocks and burgers. And I'm still married to the bird that puked in my Astra. Brilliant. There you go.
Oh, what a modern fable of love.
I mean, who needs Tinder when you just go to a rave?
With an Astra. I used to know a guy who was a bit of a raver, a bit of a soft raver, because I think he was a sort of, you know, bit of a posh boy. And he had a Mark II Golf that he'd inherited from his mum. And
that's a good rave car.
Yeah, yeah, it is actually, because it was like, this was in the early 90s, so it's already obsolete, but it was a good rave car for a number of reasons. Spacious, you can get probably about six mates in it for one thing. But he was once on his way back from a rave in Liverpool late at night, and he fell asleep at the wheel.
Oh gosh.
And he was woken up by sort of bumping and bouncing, which was his Mark II Golf just driving across a field. Like, he got lucky. Oh. Somehow it went through, I don't know if it went through a hedge or it was like it was a clear patch on some country road or so, but it just he had the absolute touch of it. It just went cleanly off the road and carried on driving across a field.
But then, really?
Yeah. And even to the point where he was then able to just turn around. It must have been grass, I guess. I mean, if he, you know, imagine if it was muddy and his car had sunk.
But imagine if it was ploughed.
He just kind fresh. Of he turned around and just picked his way back to the road and drove home. But it's like, you know, you could have died.
I know a good rave car, a K10 Micra, first generation Nissan Micra.
Oh, they yes. were
because the 1 liter 16 valve. So when you chip in for petrol with your mates, petrol costs nothing.
No, that was not 16 valve, my friend.
Oh no, sorry, being an 8 valve.
But
it?
I think a K11 might be quite a good rave car as well.
K11's probably one of my favourite cars of all time, just because it's the cockroach that cannot be killed. It's brilliant.
But
it's the ultimate takeaway delivery car as well in the United Kingdom. The bubble shaped Nissan Micra, it can't be killed.
I think I'm gonna just float this one. I think your classic rave era, so late '80s, very late '80s, just tipping into the '90s.
Yeah.
That's the era. And the car, the quintessential raver car at that point, sitting on its back bump stops with six lads in it, is a light yellow Nova SR on the three-spoke alloys with the two-tone paint.
Okay. I remember the SR and I remember that colour. I know the colour you mean.
It's a slightly milky yellow.
It is milky. It is buttermilky.
But yellow, as we established last week, is the quintessential rave colour for a car.
It is a good rave. I mean, like the DJ would turn up in an E36 BMW M3 yellow. And you'd be like, oh, this DJ's doing all right. You know, groove riders in his E36. But I think that would be okay in about 92.
Mm-hmm.
But Nova SR in 89 seems a bit...
Yeah, I think it's too... Well, no, if you think the Nova came out in, what, 82, so...
Mm. No, I was think it your mum? Was it your mum's car? Because a lot of ravers would have just borrowed their mum's car. I'm just going away camping with some friends for the weekend. Yeah, like hell you are. You're going to the biggest outdoor gathering in Bournemouth, and it's Fantasia First Taste, or whatever it was called, and you're going to take 17 White Doves and whatever, Mitsubishis, and whatever other pills that they with names that... steeped in folklore,
and then they come home on the Sunday night, and then Monday morning questions will be asked. The mum going, Michael, why does my car smell of cigarette smoke?
Yes, exactly. And why is it so muddy? And why are there muddy handprints all over the back window? So, oh well, we got it stuck in a field. What a camping field. Yeah. We were camping in the field. Yeah. What, along with 30,000 gurning people?
Why are there bite marks in the sun visors? Yeah. Have you been gurning in my Nova?
And why are there white Walt Disney gloves in the glove box? I don't own any of those. You know, the ones, Michael, that the snooker, the person that arranges all the snooker balls on the snooker table.
Len Ganley gloves.
Yeah, those gloves. Those blooming gloves with the three pleats on the back that Mickey Mouse has. Oh, gosh. I have to say, I do like that era.
Yeah,
I like that. I do like that music. It was definitely something that resonated with me as a secondary schooler.
Well, you should get
definitely.
You should get a milky yellow Nova SR.
I would actually like to. Maybe I would. A rave car project would be good. I think it would.
I can't get that out of my head now. Anyway, oh hey, I know what I was going to ask you.
I was
walking the dog the other day, and I heard a siren coming. And, you know, it's always fine. You can't not look round at where a siren's coming from.
Never.
And I was surprised at what I saw. It was by a main road here in London, and the car that was making the siren noise was an unmarked police car, but it had the blue lights going behind the grille, siren coming from it.
Yeah.
Dark blue, current shape, Subaru Legacy.
Really?
I was surprised.
Wasn't a doctor's car.
Well,
definitely police.
Doctors don't get to do blues and twos, do they? They're not allowed.
I don't think they do.
You don't get plainclothes doctor cars, I think.
Doctor is allowed. A doctor on call is allowed lights, but not a siren, I don't think.
Oh, but don't they have to have. Is it a green light? Are they allowed?
Is it a green light? I'm just about to say, I think doctors is green.
This was a blue. Green. This was the full blues coming from hidden locations. I know.
Scooby Legacy.
Now, I started thinking. That's actually quite a good. I mean, actually, those recent Legacies, I don't think they're that quick, are they? But they're reliable. They're
grippy.
Grippy, yeah, in all weathers. Mm. Symmetrical four-wheel drive, as it were. And spacious, I think. Big boot, all that.
Spacious.
But also good and anonymous.
very, very anonymous. That is a really quite a good getaway car because it's not distinct, really, is it?
So my question was going to be, what is the weirdest unmarked police car you've ever seen?
Oh my gosh, the weirdest unmarked police car.
So I'll tell you another one. My absolute favourite that I ever saw was not long after I'd moved to London. So it was in the early 2000s. And I heard multiple sirens coming up the main road near where I lived in Highgate. And yeah. I turned round. It was a convoy of three unmarked cars, all with the hidden blue lights going and the sirens going, all dark blue.
Yeah, midnight blue, yeah.
Yeah. They're always midnight blue. It's really...
Stakeout blue. Yeah. Yeah, it is, isn't it? You know, It's a moonlit night. You've been sat there for 9 hours casing a joint.
Yeah, you don't want black because that looks sort of too sinister. That's what the Crims too sinister. Would have. Crims have black cars, but undercover policemen, they have dark blue.
My wife's a Crim. She loves a jet black car.
Yeah, so does mine, actually. What does that say?
I don't know. Well, she doesn't like cleaning the bastard thing, I can tell you that much.
So the three weird unmarked cars that I saw many, many years ago were, in order, from my memory, a bug-eyed Scorpio.
Oh, okay.
A Renault Safran.
Gosh, I remember those. They had a nice egg crate grill,
yes.
Didn't they?
Yeah, some of them, yes. And then the third one was a Nissan Maxima.
A Nissan Maxima? Okay. That were badged, what were they badged in America?
It was a QX at some point as well. I think it was a Maxima in the US all the time, and we got it as a QX sometimes. They couldn't decide.
Ah, that's right. Was that V6, front-wheel drive?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, now, gosh, I don't know if I can compete. I remember an Astra Belmont.
Oh, well...
Not great.
I'm kind of fascinated by this, because I've seen all sorts of weird stuff. But that one stuck in my mind, mainly because I was like, you couldn't get three more depreciating cars at that point, because they were all still current, I think, at that, in whatever that was, 2001, I guess.
Maybe that was it. They got offered big-engined, undesirable cars as a fleet deal. They were like, listen, nobody wants a V6 Renault. Can you just, please for goodness
take
sake,
them away.
Can you buy these last 60 so that we don't have to drop-kick them out of our dealerships? Can you just please have them?
I heard a really good story the other day about there was a guy who worked at Rover, and he was responsible for all their government contract stuff. So that meant police and any civil service and anything like that. And they kind of shuffled him off into early retirement or something. And he was just bored. And he got in touch with an old colleague who'd moved on to Hyundai UK and said, look, you know, can you get me in for a meeting at Hyundai? Maybe I could come in and, you know, get some government fleet contracts for those guys. Went in and took the meeting, and Hyundai went, well, we don't really do that sort of thing, but you're welcome to have a go. We just can't pay your salary for it because, you know, it's not something we have an ambition for. I tell you what, we'll do you commission. You get commission on any deals you do. The bloke went away, immediately landed massive deal to supply the Metropolitan Police with I-30s.
Really?
He absolutely bossed it, and Hyundai became quite a big player in the police thing. And as a result, this guy became Hyundai UK's single highest paid employee. He was taking more in commission alone than the managing director was being paid.
Because he'd landed such a big fleet deal.
Because he'd landed such a big fleet deal, and because those police deals, these were for marked cars. You remember there was a big thing where suddenly Hyundai's became like the London police cars.
Yeah.
He landed that, and they're so, because they get through, you know, they want a lot of cars. They're a big deal.
The only unmarked police car that I keep thinking about is the one that I have been chased by, which was a Cavalier, Vauxhall Cavalier Mark III.
V6?
No, I think it was 2 litre petrol.
Yeah.
But sorry to disappoint. Mm. To be honest, I didn't hang around to look at the badges. I was 14 and we were doing something mischievous and I had to get out quickly.
What, you ran off?
Yeah, we did. We ran off en masse. Yeah. We were being naughty. We weren't joyriding. I'm not going to say we were joyriding because that's not true. But we were learning to...
Drive
a tractor and a digger. We were learning how to do that on private property, probably the property of the owner of the tractor and the digger. Because, you know, I'm a country boy. That's one of the things that we did. We'd worked out when we were walking back from school for weeks on end, there was a new housing estate being built.
Oh, that's manna from heaven for boys of a certain age.
Teenage lads who were just idiots.
Unsecured building site.
Oh, and we'd cased it a number of times. And after about 2 months, we're like, right, my friend said, I know that there's a four-wheel drive dumper truck, there's an earth mover, there's at least one tractor, and all of them have the keys left in them day in, day out. And we're like, you've got to get into this area where they are. And it backs on the unbuilt housing estate backs onto a field, which was going to be the next phase of the development. So we're like, okay. And we'd arranged it. I remember it was like Lord of the Flies or something. We'd arranged it over weeks, going, right, we're going to go in there. We're going to work out our exit point, and we'll see if we can drive this, that, and the other. And we did. And the problem was, is we got quite good at it. We would learn to drive one of them and then put it back in exactly the place that we found it. And then the next day, we'd do it like once a week. And it got to the point where we told a few other kids at school.
Oh, never do that.
I know. We made a grave error.
Some fuckwit will spoil the party.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. So what happened was, is that as the weeks went on, we got a bit cocky. In fact, at one point, I remember this was the high point. Someone had invited girls down and someone else had brought some cans of beer.
Never do either of those things. I know. People start showing off to the girls and spoil it. Because they'll take it too far and turn over a digger or something.
Oh, well, the vehicle in question that ended up being the most entertaining was the four-wheel steering, four-wheel drive dumper truck. You know the ones that hinge in the middle?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was one of those. And the girls were in the bit where you dump the big bucket on the front. And everyone was getting cocky, starting to drive around the field quite fast. My mate was going round in, I remember it, a JCB, went into the middle of the field, put the stilts down, turned the chair around and started digging enormous hole. I know, I laugh now, but I'm not recommending this as a good idea to anybody. So as things got cockier and cockier, I think what had happened is one night it all kicked off. Everyone was travelling around in diggers and things, and this unmarked police car comes out of nowhere and opens the gate and comes into the field where my friends are parading around in dumper trucks, tractors, diggers, whatever. And amazingly, I had just not long got off one of the diggers and I was stood to the side with a couple of the boys, marvelling at what we'd achieved as an idiotic 14-year-old. Anyway, needless to say, it all just erupted. I just broke into one of those runs where your legs are a little bit too fast and they sort of hit one another, you know, like a kind of Scooby-Doo leg run.
Yeah, an overspeed, where your legs go overspeed and you're kind of like, oh, I don't know, I don't
switch them off. And I knew that I'd have to jump across quite a big stream / small river, and then there was a big area of woodland which I reckoned I could hide in. I broke into this run, and while I was running away, I kept looking back to see what was going on with this police car. And one of my mates had abandoned ship on the dumper truck, and I think it had a hand throttle. He jumped off it and was running away, and it just was driving in the set direction and just kept driving.
Holy shit.
And as he ran away and I ran away, I saw it go down a ditch and then come out the other side of the ditch effortlessly. Because, of course, it's four-wheel drive and it went through a few hedges. I don't actually know where it ended up.
It could still be going.
Yeah, but what was brilliant, I say brilliant, I'm not endorsing any of this, is that none of us got caught. We all managed to escape. And I spent about 7 hours hiding in the woods. And I climbed up a tree and I sat in the trees silently for hours.
Like a guilty squirrel.
And then what I did is I like a complete idiot, I turned my clothes inside out and then walked home a different route. And we never spoke of it again. And that was the last time we ever did heavy plant joyriding.
Jesus. That's funny, yeah. Actually, because one of the two occasions when I ran off from the police, I turned my jacket inside out as some kind of subterfuge as well. But my story's not as good as yours. So I think this is probably quite a good time to wrap things up, because we'll never top that one.
No, I know we can't wrap things up. I want to know about your police situation.
I'll tell you next week, because what I want to do is, before we finish, I have a couple of updates. Well, one's an update, which is, you know, I was whinging on about my 911 battery going flat.
Yeah.
I've checked with someone at Porsche, and they've said it's probably fine to leave it. Just leave it flat. And then just stick a new battery in it. It'll probably throw up some warning lights, but don't worry, they'll go away. That was their expert opinion. So
just have a battery conditioner, then you might not need to buy a new battery.
Well, that'll be the next step. The other thing is, I owe you an apology, because last week I was saying with misplaced confidence that Jerry Halliwell is the most successful Spice Girl in solo terms. And I checked this because I started to have some creeping doubts that you were right. It's Mel C. And just from everything I can gather, yeah, it's Mel C.
See? Slightly whiny Mel C, because she's the only one that's had a serious music career.
Mel B, nowhere musically speaking. So screw her. The one with the most money is Victoria Beckham, though, because obviously she has the Beckham billions or whatever they are. So there we go. That's fascinating.
Oh.
Thank you for listening to Smith & Sniff, the podcast. If you have enjoyed this, remember, we have a new one of these every Monday morning. If you would like to see us doing this, we have a massive archive of video Smith & Sniff content on YouTube. Go and have a look at that. We also stick the podcasts on YouTube for people who want to listen to it that way. If you like the cut of this jib, but you wish it was 50% of what goes on here, then check out Johnny's YouTube channel, Car Pervert, where there's lots of good stuff and a refreshing absence of me. And if you're really, really bored, please go to Amazon and buy my latest book, which is called A Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia. It's over 250 really, really arcane car facts.
I have to say, that's amazing bit of promo, and I'm very impressed.
I didn't even read it off anything. That was just off the top of my head. No, I was just whoring, ad-lib whoring.
You promoted me, and with my solo material, you promoted your book, which is fantastic.
And of course, just like and subscribe everything that you can.
Well, I have to say, the comments from this podcast that people put in, and the ratings, the star ratings, I have to say, are really entertaining. The comments are more entertaining than the actual show. We might as well just read out comments.
Just play out some white noise and then and then get the comments in.
Like and subscribe and like and subscribe and also like, but also subscribe.
And subscribe and like as well, if you prefer. Good.
Yes.
All right. Good to talk. See you next week.
Yeah, thanks, Rich.
Bye.
£50 or fuck off, yeah?